Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on June 12th of 2011 under the headline Legendary Oregon Wrestler Got Pinned by a Heavyweight Real Estate Dream. Here we go. In late May of 1978, the Wreckers went to work on Lincoln City's most eligible haunted mansion, the sprawling Timberline Lodge-shaped husk of what was to have been the D-Lake Rod and Gun Club on the shore of Devil's Lake. It couldn't have really been haunted, of course. To be haunted, if you believe in that sort of thing, a house needs to have been occupied at some point, and this one never was. No, the only ghosts in this sportsman's palace were the dreams of a fellow named Robin Reed, former shipyard worker, newspaper editor, real estate agent, and Olympic gold medalist, and quite possibly the best amateur wrestler of any weight in American history. Robin Reed was an Arkansas native, but his wrestling story started after his family moved to Portland, and it was almost an accident. Quote, "I needed gymnasium credits to graduate from high school, but I didn't want any gym because I was already getting all the exercise I needed operating an air hammer at the shipyards," Reed once said. "I was only 125 pounds, and I could barely hold on to that hammer, so that was all the gym I needed." So he went for wrestling instead, and quickly found that he was a natural. By 1921, he was already a legend, attending college at Oregon Agricultural College, which is, of course, now Oregon State University, and winning wrestling matches at the collegiate level. By 1925, he had three national freestyle wrestling championships under his belt and had earned a berth on the U.S. Olympic team. He'd still never once been pinned. The entire U.S. Olympic wrestling team traveled to Paris for the games on the same ship. En route, of course, they did what they did best, and Reed did it better than any of them. Reed pinned every member of the team but one, whom he battled to either a draw or a pinless victory, depending on who you asked. One of the men he pinned would go on to take the gold in heavyweight class in Paris. So, in the 134.5-pound class, would Reed. And there are those who believe that if he'd been allowed to wrestle in every weight class, the U.S. would have swept the gold medals that year. Quote, "He had a genius for knowing how to handle the human body in wrestling," one of his former coaches told authors Jeff Welsh and George Edmonston. "He was tremendously flexible and quick. He had great balance, was a keen competitor, and his ingenuity was so remarkable that he would figure out a way to beat you." But he was most definitely not someone you wrestled with for fun. He was notoriously nasty on the mat. Quote, "He is generally regarded as the most feared and punishing wrestler of all time," Mike Chapman writes. "A man who would break an opponent's arm if the mood struck him to do so." I haven't been able to confirm whether Robin Reed actually broke people's bones. I suspect Mr. Chapman was indulging in little hyperbole, but you get the idea. On his return from the Olympics, Reed coached the OAC Beavers for a couple of years, bringing them to a national championship in 1926. But in that same year, he was accused of cheating at a tournament, and OAC dropped the wrestling program entirely in response. Reed spent some time in professional wrestling, but was never happy with the flashy showbiz image of the pros, no macho man Randy Savage he. So in the mid-1930s, he quit to get into real estate development. Reed had a plan that was perhaps a few dozen years ahead of its time. He'd build a mammoth lodge on the shore of Devil's Lake. It would be like a hotel, complete with lobby, lounge, swimming pools, casino, but the living quarters would be condominiums, not hotel rooms. He called it the D-Lake Rod and Gun Club. It took Reed a couple years to get the project underway. The Depression took a huge divot out of his timeline. But finally, in 1938, ground was broken on the huge building. Reed styled his creation after Timberline Lodge, built just a few years earlier and already something of an icon for the state. It featured three giant stone fireplaces built with stone blocks salvaged from the ruins of the Polk County Courthouse, which had burned earlier. But the following year, Hitler invaded Poland. The U.S. started gearing up for war that its leaders knew was probably coming, and the markets started to tremble a bit. Reed also found he was having trouble selling the concept of a condo hotel. Progress slowed to a crawl. Then World War II broke out, and Reed's project was dead in the water, as resources and workers were concentrated on the fight. By 1942, he was facing legal hassles over the whole thing, and after the war ended, construction never resumed. Reed moved on. So there the Rod and Gun Club sat, vacant, gaping, full of nothing but echoes, the salty air turning its cedar siding grayer with each passing decade. Finally, in 1978, wrecking and salvage crews moved in and started taking the massive structure apart. Within a few months, it was all gone. 1978 was also the year Reed was inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, and also the year in which, on December 20th, he died. Throughout his wrestling career, Reed was famous for his willingness to wrestle opponents of any weight, up to and including heavyweights. He was also known for winning. Not once in his entire 19-year career did Robin Reed lose a wrestling match. This is a record that only one other Olympic wrestler, Japan's Osamu Watanabe, has ever matched, and Watanabe's career was much shorter. But in the arena of condominium development, well, Reed did get himself pinned once by a super heavyweight dream. Key sources in this story have included works by Roy Whiting, Jeff Welsh, and George Edmonston Jr., Mike Chapman, and Peter Ballant. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do or just want to say hi? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com or ping me on Twitter at @offbeatoregon or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Also, do let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and an inclination to talk about Oregon history. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way around 6 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you're looking forward to the next one, well, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.